A lifetime of hard work. Children laughing in the kitchen. Family photos on a restaurant wall. A legacy that lives on. It all comes from the power of a conversation. Like the one Tommy Hall had with First Horizon Bank about taking over his father's Charleston-based restaurant business. Now the table is set for a whole new generation. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Tommy. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
A certain four-letter word, at least in the South, may turn downright evil. Chuck Oliver Show. On a Tuesday. That four-letter word is union. Yes, I understand. That four-letter word is union. And if you grew up in the, I'll say, southern of Virginia and then Texas and east of that, and whatever, we know what it is. In a large case... to a large degree, if you're looking back at personal experiences, what you've observed, I know certainly in my life, unions and strikes and work stoppages and things like that, that's been mostly in my life, my personal experience growing up in the South. My personal experience, most of that has been limited to professional sports leagues. Had an uncle who threw bags for Eastern Airlines up until the day they shut down. And so I would hear him talk about his union. And even as like a ninth grader, when he was telling, oh, we got a new chairman, he's going to do this. And I was like, no, it sounds like he's about to bankrupt the company on purpose and doesn't care if everybody's out of work. And then in maybe, was that January of what, 90 or 91? That's exactly what happened. So as far as direct family line, I don't have a lot of experience with unions. And so growing up in the South, we kind of look at that as, well, we need a union for. Right or wrong, good or in the middle or horrible, that's sort of a very broad brush, traditionally, view once you get below Virginia-ish about. Well, that's when we're talking about Norma Rae. All right? That's when we're talking about a textile factory. You start bringing a union into my college football? All right. We're about to have words. We're about to throw rounds here. When I say that union has traditionally been a four-letter word, well, the UAB Blazers football team, the entire roster, every kid has signed on. If you didn't see this story, Trent Dilfer, who obviously Players Association did a lot for him. Trent Dilfer looked at the landscape of, and there are several to choose from, the landscape of companies like business ventures that are attempting to organize college athletes for revenue sharing. And we're going to be the funnel, and we'll take our 8.5%, but we're going to organize all this. And there's are several that are competing because it's wide open. Athletes.org. I don't endorse it. I'm just giving you a piece of information. Trent Dilfer, he looked at the options, and he introduced his team a couple weeks back to athletes.org. And it is a players association. And there is no real established players association with bargaining rights and collective bargaining. Doesn't exist. Trying to exist. And athletes.org, they have reps that will go around, and it's just like the Starbucks in Birmingham, and we're here to unionize, and the Mercedes plant down 450. Like, it's the exact same thing. Except instead of talking to Starbucks employees or folks who work for Mercedes, we're talking to the green and gold in downtown Birmingham. All the kids on the roster were at the meeting. And following the presentation from the adults in the room, who apparently did exactly what they were supposed to. They were supposed to put on, I'm not going to deride this because I have no idea about the specifics. I'm sure they put on an informative, truthful, enlightening, illuminating, curtains opening sort of discussion for the players. And Trent Dilfer, here's the thing that I would guess about him. If he's like almost every coach I know, they really do only want good things for their players. I don't know what happened at Ampipe, but in almost every case I know, a coach really, really does want good things for his players. And so Trent Dilfer decided this would be a good thing for his players. And it would be a good thing for him, his program, the kids to get out in front of this, like be on the first surfboard as that wave was cresting, versus looking around going, hey, what just happened? Why is everybody on the beach? So Trent Dilfer has decided I'm going to put this in motion. And downtown Birmingham, a couple weeks back, brought in the reps from athletes.org. They put on their presentation, and then this is where I'll get back to my editorial. Apparently, they wowed them. And I'm going to use a word that can be negative, but I'm sure it applies, but I don't mean it negative. I'm sure they put on a very professional and slick presentation. And I don't know if they were pulling long scarves out of their cuff or a quarter from behind a kid's ear, but I can tell you what the intent was. The intent was to, if not overwhelm, overwow these kids and seem authoritative and seem very factual and get every last one of them to sign up. And that's what happened. Now, when you're dealing with a room of just college kids, and this is not to belittle because I'm going to call myself. I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, folks. I was basically a boring, responsible, kind of good college kid. Walking across campus one day, I signed up for a credit card because they gave me a 2-liter Pepsi and a t-shirt. Like, they don't do that outside AARP meetings or Berkshire Hathaway. Okay, they do it on college campuses. Why? Because we're college kids. And so the adults came in and gave their presentation, and it made a big impression on a lot of the kids. Specifically, I'll give you quotes from Jacob Zeno. Good quarterback, really good quarterback, UAB. This is a quote from Jacob Zeno before meeting with a union organizer from athletes.org. Quote, on the field, that's going to take care of itself. But preparing off the field with the classroom, film study, the playbook, that makes the on-the-field play easier. Jacob Zeno, UAB quarterback, and guy who wants what's his. Quote, we've been cheated out of money. Decisions are being made behind our back. It's not really fair because we do so much for the sport, for the school, and the conference. Jacob Zeno has been enlightened, he believes. Funny thing here. And what this all is leading to is structured collective bargaining where the athletes are going to get something in an envelope on the 15th and 30th. They're going to be salary paid employees, and then they can go out and do their own thing as well. It's going to be like they're on the PGA Tour. Here's your money, and then you go out and make your own endorsement deals as well. It's like they play for the Boston Red Sox. You're the shortstop. Here's your money. Go out and make your own deal with Under Armour, Nike, whoever you do. It's going to be the exact same thing as if they played for the LA Rams, except they play for the UAB Blazers. Because as Jacob said, now that I've seen the presentation, I realize we've been cheated out of money. And this is not fair because we do so much for the sport, the school, and the conference. So that means that the talking points included everybody above the age of 22 is evil. The people who run the sport, the people at your own school, the conference, all the adults, don't trust them. Tough part is, a lot of that message is accurate. Has been. But this is all leading to they're going to be employees. And the funny thing is, do you remember back around beginning of the pandemic, we got the demand letter from the Pac-12 players. They wanted 50% of all revenue. NCAA pivoted. They gave them name, image, likeness. They said, give them some money. It will distract them for a minute that they're not getting the money they asked for. They're just getting, okay, we wanted money. We've got it. Wait a minute. The schools still aren't paying. So the players were always going to circle back, but they got distracted a little bit. Funny thing is, the pandemic is what derailed the Pac-12 players from a truly ridiculous demand. They wanted half of the revenue. And then suddenly the revenue protections started coming in, and everybody realized that this is just going to be 70%, 80% less. We don't know if we're going to survive. So it derailed that demand letter from the Pac-12 players. But what the pandemic also did, it exposed publicly the desperate, immediate straits virtually every college athletic department was in when its revenue got impacted. This is a metric ton of foundation-shaking change happening right now, and it's not all good. If the players become employees, then the tenet of being on scholarship is all different. I'm paying you, so you can now pay your own way. If there are no athletic scholarships or many fewer, which is a great deal for the school, if there are no athletic scholarships, we're aware that, like, the athletic department, they actually do pay. It's not just, well, we have all these scholarships, so we call enough seats to be reserved in the classes. They write a check, man. So they don't have to do that as much anymore. And that's just for the kids who actually, we keep your sport and you continue to play. You're not on scholarship anymore because we're not giving football players scholarships. You're employees. Well, if there are a lot fewer athletic scholarships, suddenly the federal law, Title IX, that says you have to have an equal number of scholarships available. No federal law says you have to hire an equal number of males and females. And colleges can do exactly what professional franchises do. Pay the athletes an agreed-upon percentage of revenue. On a college campus, folks, I walked one for 5 years and a quarter. There are a lot of sports that bring in zero revenue. Think back to the pandemic as well. Everybody from Furman to East Carolina to Stanford said, we're slashing sports and we're doing it right now. And a lot of them have stayed slashed, and you realize, yeah, we've moved right along. I had a friend of mine, I say Furman to East Carolina, I had a friend of mine who was on scholarship at Furman, someone who was a swimmer, friend of mine, scholarship swimmer at East Carolina. They're both talking about their sports being dropped. And we're online and we're raising and we're going to get signatures. And I was thinking, I was like, you go, outstanding, chest out, rep your school. And inside I was thinking, this is not going to work. There are sports they've been wanting to drop regardless. Now that they have an excuse to, and a lot of them got dropped and a lot of them never came back. This, same sort of thing, folks. Now, will these and myriad other deets get worked out? Yes. But these are pretty big deets, and they all do need to get worked out. Truth is, teenagers and 20 and 21-year-olds, folks, they're slicing off giant chunks of the golden goose, and they do not have the perspective to care. It's not that they're irresponsible or selfish, or it's that that's baked into being 18, 19, 20, and 21. Now, I told you, I was a, by and large, decent, responsible, sort of intelligent college kid. I was still a college kid. I did all manner of silly things. And the problem is, the adults in the room are the ones who have been on the other side of the deposit slip, like, you know, the past century or so. So there's no trust. So this is where we are right now. And you know the toughest part? Everything I just said for like the past however many minutes, that's only the second most impactful financial story to the future of college sports today. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about the actual headline next.
More college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Enjoyed it. The support locally, but also just, our fans are all about the program, and it's really cool being the head coach here. I've enjoyed it. It's been awesome in the past 3 months for me.
Out what his salary was. I think it was the end of January. He got a paycheck and it was easy to do the prorate. Now whatever, and you're like, it's 10.5 or 7 or something. But he says we're having a great time. It's great to be head coach. Yeah, it should be. You're head coach at Alabama. It's pretty awesome. They open at home against our engineer, a guy on the ones and twos, David. He's a Western Kentucky grad, and they host Western Kentucky on August 31st. We need to make sure we get David a credential over there so he can be sitting right there on the 50. Actually, no, they've done the same thing with their press box, hadn't they? They moved on. But, yeah, they open Western Kentucky and South Florida at home. And then this is credit to the Bama program, and this was direction from a few years back. Western Kentucky, South Florida, both on campus. At Wisconsin, and not Wisconsin in Dallas or Orlando or Jacksonville or somewhere, at Wisconsin, Wisconsin, jump around Wisconsin. So that's not nothing. Going back on campus, Alabama was one of the first, and there's home and away series, but Alabama was one of the first programs to really, off the deep end into the week one neutral site paycheck games. And then they were one of the first to realize the next wave. We were going to schedule more wins, basically, which means lesser opponents. So we do have to do something to spruce up the home gate and the season ticket buyers. So let's go ahead and move a lot of these games back to campus. And so they've done that. It's awesome when Alabama and Florida State play in Atlanta. It's great. It's an event when it's on campus, isn't it? It's just different. When a stadium, which isn't real, like Mercedes-Benz or Jerry World or something, that thing was created to host giant, huge, just awesome events. You know what wasn't? Bryant Denny or Doak Campbell. And it's kind of awesome when you cram a lot more people and a lot more technology and want and all importance and everything into, honestly, I've said before, it's a big chunk of rain-stained concrete. That's what most of our stadiums underneath the facade basically are. So, at Wisconsin, I can't wait. Heath will get into this, I think, a little bit more, but I had said that a head coach, a sitting head coach in college football, inviting basically a union organizer in to talk to his team, and all 85 kids say, give me a pen. Smoke coming off the end of it. Somehow that's only the second biggest finance, future, contract, negotiation sort of, and I'll hate talking off field, but you got no choice. Story today in college football. Heath, folks who at one point were on scholarship playing college sports, they may get a check. I don't know if it'll be $131 or $6,020, but there's a chance, like there's a bunch of little checks about to go out to all these former athletes. There's settlement talks between the NCAA and those who are suing them.
Yeah, and this is the case, if you've heard of it, called the House case. There's another case also tied into it. But basically what it boils down to is there's an attorney named Jeffrey Kessler who has been winning sports labor cases for decades. And the NCAA, after they got dunked on for about the 18th time in a row, finally figured out, yeah, we really, really, really need to not take this dunk because this is antitrust, and that means damages are trebled. And so you're talking potentially as much as $4 billion if this guy goes to court and wins, and everything in the history of the NCAA and this guy and the laws says he probably will win. So as of yesterday, ESPN reporting that they had settlement talks last week that are expected, it looks like, to get something done. Again, what the specific dollars on this are going to look like is not clear, but you're talking about a group of plaintiffs that are saying, well, obviously we've seen from NIL there was plenty of money there to be had. The NCAA, of course, took a public position of insisting, nope, none of these players have any value of any kind except for maybe one or two who win a Heisman or something. Other than that, none of these players have any market value of any kind. The only value they have is that they wear an Ohio State helmet or whatever. But on their own, they have no value to anybody. They would not make a dime in name, image, and likeness. Well, now that it's been very clearly shown that's not true. These people are saying, you kept us from making our money, and we want it. And so how they work out, Chuck, what an appropriate settlement is, and does everybody get the same NIL, or does a guy who was a starter at Alabama pretty obviously have more NIL value than a guy who was a backup at Louisiana Monroe? I have no idea what the formula is going to be, but it's apparently going to work out to less than $4 billion, which is the main thing right now that the schools are concerned about. Also, of course, this leads towards the idea that maybe the schools are going to wind up handling the NIL themselves, that basically the players, instead of selling their NIL likeness to a group or just taking stuff directly from a collective, that maybe the school will be basically their NIL agent and steer money to them accordingly rather than making them a full-fledged employee. So, again, this is heavy-duty stuff, well beyond either of our pay grade and certainly well beyond the room we've got on the show. But what this does lead to in the end is if they settle this case, they're going to settle another case too, and they're going to likely finally with that be able to get somebody in D.C. to say, okay, that's it. You can't sue them anymore. Like they finally have acknowledged they screwed this up. They screwed it up bad. They put things in place to fix it. That's it. Now we're going to take it off the table. You can't just line up and treat them as the latest boxer to step up and hit the bag anymore. And that would finally mean some level of certainty on cost, certainty on player movement, a lot of things that this sport pretty clearly needs longer term for this to not just go off the rails.
All right, and here is a truth that I don't know what kind of difference this is going to make, but it will be explored. Heath, it's beyond argument. Even right now it's true, but historically there are almost no college athletes who missed, I mean, a statistically insignificant percentage. Almost no players missed out on endorsement money. They missed out on being paid to go play somewhere. They missed out on recruiting money that is being called name, image, likeness. The money that Jackson Dart's not going to get one person to use a private jet. Jackson Dart is endorsing a private jet company so that he will stay at Ole Miss and play quarterback. So it is more than a thin layer of distinction, I believe. And I can promise you that it will be explored fully, but this is way simpler than it's being presented.
Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
A lifetime of hard work. Children laughing in the kitchen. Family photos on a restaurant wall. A legacy that lives on. It all comes from the power of a conversation, like the one Tommy Hall had with First Horizon Bank about taking over his father's Charleston-based restaurant business. Now the table is set for a whole new generation. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Tommy. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Guest we have, great guest every single day, but on Tuesday, bottom of hour one, we get a full couple segments. One of our good buddies from College Football Matrix, he is College Football Matrix, it's his laptop, it's his ones and zeros. Dave Bartu, welcome back, friend. How are you?
Brother Chuck, I am doing great today. A little stormy outside. Pretty wet up here in the Pacific Northwest, so not ideal, but it's a great day to be inside calculating ease of schedule for teams in college football.
Ooh, all right. Well, we'll get to that in a second. I'm glad to know that the Caribou mm-hmm. have at least a day away from you. They're safe. I want to start with the NFL. Well, first of all, I said you've got the laptop and the ones and zeros. Tell everybody what you do with your laptop and the code, and then what sort of people will call you and employ you.
Yeah. Number one, top of the mountain is I tell stories with numbers. Okay. The second layer of that is the stories I tell with numbers are designed to do two things. for our clients. Okay. It's designed to create efficiencies in what they're doing, in their job, and it's designed to reduce acquisition risk, which is what every NFL and college football program that we deal with faces on a daily basis, whether it's coaching acquisition risk or player acquisition risk. And as you can imagine, the people that call us are people that are looking for those two things. Inside the data, efficiency and risk reduction. So whether it's head coaches, director of recruiting, player personnel, board of regents, you name it. And actually, we're getting into all the sports. I was just before this call here, I was on the phone with a Division I softball coach because we have figured out how to define athleticism in men's and women's sports, which is going to make recruiting much easier for every sport across the country.
If you give enough of the same relevant data for enough athletes, you see which mm-hmm. ones are most often. You said in one measuring stick, 94% this works, 6% it works. Let's go with the 94% category.
Exactly.
That's a heck of a picture. All right. Yeah. Before we get into it, because I'm always strength the schedule. I know that phrase. You say we're going to talk ease of schedule. We'll get to that. Michael Penix, boy, he set the world on fire Thursday, and there wasn't enough. The Atlanta Falcons had to be treated like a pinata for the next 4 days, or we weren't going to be satisfied. Before we talk college and coaches and all kinds of other stuff that has to do with Saturday, give a final opinion. I know we talked all kinds of quarterbacks because that position in particular you drill down on quite a bit as far as predicting NFL futures. There mm-hmm. is a phrase I want to ask you about, D&D M. That's do not draft medical. There's D&D C, do not draft character. There's whatever, but D&D medical. I thought with his two right knees, his right shoulder, his left shoulder, I thought that Penix may be a D&D M. He goes eighth overall. Just give me your flyover, the entire, like, what the Falcons or an NFL team got with Michael Penix.
Well, the first thing is he should be buying a bunch of cooling gel from the Pro Athletes Hemp Association for all those aches and pains. I can tell you that much. But on paper, sans the medical, this is the highest ceiling quarterback in the draft, right? But that medical is a pretty big one. It ain't just one knee. It's both knees. It ain't just one shoulder. It's both shoulders. It's everything there. So clearly Atlanta was able to look past all of that somehow. I think as a GM, my personal opinion, medical would be one of my huge red flags, right? I would try to avoid anybody with a medical problem because I know the numbers on injuries in the NFL, and they are far, far worse than people realize. It's extremely, unbelievably violent sport. So, but with Penix, again, that's the highest ceiling guy there. So I can understand Atlanta or anybody trying to make a go with it, hoping that it works out. I mean, it is, you and I've had this discussion before, it is a quarterback-driven league. Most guys are going to fail. And if you're going to take a risk in the NFL in the draft, it's got to be, the biggest risk has got to be at the quarterback position. So I don't blame them, and I understand their excuse or their reasoning. Yeah. Look, hey, we don't expect to be back here in the top 10. We don't expect to see a guy with this kind of – look, a guy with that kind of profile doesn't exist very much in college football. There's nobody that had his quarterback effect and had a first-round grade physically. So I agree with that. They're not going to get another shot to get a guy with that profile, but that medical profile, it's still – if it doesn't work – it'll be on the medical side. If he stays healthy, I say he has the biggest upside in the draft.
Man, and there, you know what? You know what's never happened? A team missed on a wide receiver and it set the franchise back 5 years. Like, it happens every year in the NFL draft. Somebody blows it on a first-round quarterback, and because you have to try to wring out the success if it's in there, we give way too many chances to guys who, you know, the writing's already on the wall. And so it can derail you. And honestly, everything you invested in it, it is for something maybe worth $4 billion. I mean, you talk about being worth hiring an expert to help us get this thing right, Dave. You get quarterback wrong, it affects the value of your franchise, no doubt about it. All right, let's talk. What were you saying? Schedule stuff? I'm used to strength of schedule. Is that what we're going to talk
about? Ease of schedule. Well, for so long, strength of schedule always drove me nuts, right? Because strength of schedule, number one, strength of schedule, there's no correlation to how good or tough your schedule is and the quality of the team. Right. I mean, you're no matter what 12 teams you are playing on your college football schedule, your team is only as good as the team. The schedule has nothing to do with it. And I don't know why we have these contests over who has the toughest schedule overall, because to me, it never had any meaning. So I'm always trying to derive meaning from the data. And so the next step that I took is I calculate, and I've been doing this for over a decade, is I calculate ease of schedule. And the ease of schedule is the 12 teams a team is playing relative to their talent, right? So Georgia, let me give you an example, okay? Right, they're right there in your backyard. You got Georgia, mm-hmm. Georgia State. They each play the same 12 teams on the road and at home. Their strength of schedule is identical, right? You know, it has to be identical because they play the same road and home schedule as one another. So that is an equal strength of schedule. But the ease of schedule, now we're taking a look at that strength of the schedule, and then our denominator is the talent of the team. So the ease of schedule of Georgia with the same 12 teams as Georgia State, well, you and I both know Georgia is going to have an easier schedule.
Oh, you turn the mirror on the team we're talking about, not on the 12 teams they're playing.
Bingo.
Dave!
So now what happens?
How's your brain come up with stuff like this?
It never sleeps.
You're in a deer stand and you got like 12 hours to yourself.
Oh, dude, yeah, I know it sounds funny, but I have been in an elk stand with a laptop and my solar panel, right? Killing time with a I know it sounds funny, but seriously, you know, it's like I can't do one thing at a time. It's the brain is always moving. And so what the ease of schedule does, though, for everybody listening, what the ease of schedule does, and this is the year that I had the epiphany on this was, remember when P.J. Fleck went 12-0, and got the New York Six berth, right. So that was the year I started ease of schedule, was the beginning of that season, and I remember pulling up the ease of schedule and going, wow, look at that, look at that team right there at number 13. The only team in the top 20 ease of schedule was at number 13, and it was Western Michigan. They had the easiest schedule relative to their team talent by a country mile.
See, that to me, my brain's now – see, that's a predictor going into a season far more
there
than
– There you go. Just,
wow,
there
Dave.
Light bulb, baby, light bulb. So for the last – ever since Western Michigan, I've been going, okay – if your ease of schedule is in the top 10, there's your New York Six bowl teams, right? Now we don't care about New York Six bowl teams from the G5 level. We're talking about our playoff contenders, right? So I went back, and if you apply the new 12-team playoff to the last 10 years, 89% of all the teams had a top 20 ease of schedule walking into the season.
That is stronger than garlic. Dave, that's illuminating, man. You are opening the curtains today. Tell you what, folks, if you're listening right now, here's who I know is listening right now. Administrators, coaches, agents, players, business owners. If you have widgets, believe me, Dave can help you work it out. So Dave will tell you how to get in touch with him when we get back. We'll give you more details about Dave. But we're going to take a quick break. Come back. More Dave Bartu. He is College Football Matrix.
Text the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
He's a high-level thinker, and he joins us every Tuesday on Chuck Oliver Show. 9 states and 60 sticks. We've been doing this for a decade now, so I appreciate the blessing so very much. I want to welcome back on. He is CFB Matrix. It's Dave Bartu. Dave, tell folks anything else you may want to about College Football Matrix and how to get in touch with you, specifically that text line.
Well, specifically the text line, right? I mean, all those stations, all those states, and your listener group engages with me more than anybody out there. So you got a football question, you got a football idea, anything we talked about on the show, you want to say something nice about me, say something mean about Chuck, hit me on the line, 971-217-8419. and I'll get back to you on it.
All right, so we were talking spring practice being over and Dylan Raiola and big five-star quarterback. My daddy played there and my uncle and just the coach and all. So we were talking a little Nebraska and a Matt Rhule cut. Yeah. Tell me, what's your flyover of Matt Rhule right now? Because Nebraska is one of those programs that I think their greatest moments are probably going to stay on VHS. Like they're not going back to Nebraska as a program anytime soon. They've added Glenn Thomas in the offseason, if you care. They've brought in a quarterback coach from the league. But anything about Matt Rhule, the staff there, and the future of Nebraska? Because, by the way, the Big Ten just got a whole lot more difficult.
Oh, it did. I agree with you on the, you know, the best days are in the rearview mirror. I mean, it's replicating. Well, you think about it, any program replicating the run that Tom Osborne had.
Not impossible.
It is, right? Especially today with free agency. It's not going to happen. There's just, you know, back then you had the depth of almost unlimited scholarships. You had 120, 30, 40, 140 kids on the roster. The depth was never an issue.
And the legendary walk-on program there.
Yeah. So it's not going to be replicable for Nebraska nor anybody else. You know, let's get that straight. It's not just a Nebraska problem. Now, is it much harder for Nebraska? Yeah, it is, because they never have been an elite recruiter. You know, of all the programs that have overperformed their talent to become a dynasty, that's got to be it. Right? I mean, is there another program out there that doesn't recruit in the top 10 year in and year out, top 15 year in and year out, that wins multiple national titles?
Yeah.
No.
That, you know, we had this idea that you just go out to some farmland and got all those big offensive linemen. They weren't all from in-state, okay? And I can promise you that guys like, you know, Tommy Frazier, you weren't getting all of those guys from Omaha and Lincoln. And the thought of them replicating that, I want to go to another program because I'm a man of a certain age. And I think what I'm going to be now is just way more impressed with what Johnny Majors and Jackie Sherrill did. Let's talk Pitt Panthers. Frank Cignetti, who I thought was a pretty good coach, he got whacked. Partridge fired him, made some coaching changes. You will all know them and you can talk about it. But what does Narduzzi have going on? Because Pitt is one of those programs, you and I know what they used to be back in 70s, 80s, national champions or national championship contenders. That's ancient history as well. They're just another program in a conference that doesn't really need them, want them. They don't like the conference. I mean, it's just a weird place for a program to be. That was formerly great.
It is, but they're just a mid program, right? I mean, let's just say, you know, call it what it is. They're going to be a high 30s, low 40s, mid 40s recruiter for the foreseeable future, probably the very, very, very long foreseeable future. Not a playoff contender, not really a conference championship game contender. Coaching wise, you know, Narduzzi's done a good job with the talent he's had, you know, above average guy, very, very solid. Has difficulty putting the offensive side of the staffing together. He's a defensive coach, so no surprise there. I think he got a little lucky, a little lightning in a bottle with Pickett. because his offensive coordinator didn't say that offense should have been that good. So I thought Pickett carried that team for several years beyond where it should be. And then, yeah, in the offseason, they lost Charlie Partridge to the Colts. And, you know, as we had told them, that's a top three defensive line coach in the country. So Pitt lost their best coach on their best unit on the defensive side, and they recruit in the middle of the conference. I don't think you can expect much out of them, save a wonderful little top 25 year every 4, 5, 6 years.
All right. Any opinion about what's going on at Virginia Tech? Because Brent Pry is a guy, and I talked about him yesterday, I think, a little bit, because I'm various programs. I got about a dozen programs that, you know, you got a couple of months. You can, you know, drill down a little bit. He looked like a guy just because of the record and the product and the week to week. He had taken over not a great situation, and then he goes 3-8, and I'm like, he may be in the deep end. I may like what's going on, and Virginia Tech is another one of those programs that I look at and go, it was great, but I don't know in today's landscape what's ahead for the Hokies. But it has been a great, truly great program for about 15 years.
Oh, it was a phenomenal program, and it had some really, really good coaches. I mean, you know, even outside of Beamer, and you know, Beamer put together just a fantastic program there. But even when he left, you had Bud Foster as a DC. You know, you had their special teams coordinator who's at UNLV now and still top 10 in the country. You know, so there was really good coaching there. When Beamer left, it was a top 25 recruiter, and then it just got cratered. The recruiting slumped into the mid-high 30s, into the 40s. I mean, they regressed, ironically, they regressed back to kind of a Pitt level. But that first year was horrific for those guys. And I know there is big expectations for that program this year. They got a ton of guys coming back. They felt they were in a lot of games in the second half of the season. And so they think they've turned the corner, at least the media, the fans, and so forth. I'm just scared that, or concerned that that first year was so bad that it's kind of a sign that says he ain't going to survive this. Yeah. Right. It was that first year is so critical. Yeah. So we'll see where Virginia Tech lands, but it is a half a decade at least away from where it used to be when Beamer retired.
All right, wrapping up day bar two, College Football Matrix. Way at the very end, far side of the it used to be so much better scale. Syracuse. And I got to say, you know, if there was something like we're going to play club team football now, Syracuse is as irrelevant as literally as irrelevant as any team in Power Four football right now. They are as irrelevant as Vanderbilt. And that is a former like national championship and contender and Heisman and all time great sort of program. Give me 30 seconds on Syracuse and where they are now. I like Elijah Robinson as a recruiter. I like Fran Brown, but they got big, big challenges.
You know something? That program has been one of the most consistent recruiters in college football for the last 20 years. I mean, every class is between 50 and 55. Seriously. It's a bottom-end recruiter, and they got lucky. In the years that they've been great, they had NFL quarterbacks. Right, they had Nassab. They had
Eric Dungy.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was driven by quarterback play, and when it was good, it was good. But you know, to expect this team to be 6-6 or better any given year, I don't know what Dino did. I mean, everything improved. He was positive coach. In fact, maybe it just got stale. But to expect anybody to do better than Dino, it's going to have to be an NFL-level quarterback to take them there.
All right, give everybody the text line one more time. So if they got a question, they can get in touch with our good friend Dave Bartu.
971-217-8419, anytime, anywhere. Appreciate being on today, boss.
It's always wonderful. Do it in 7 days, Dave. Thank you. All right, Dave Bartu again, College Football Matrix, will join us. Yeah, Syracuse is just – a program that is as irrelevant as you can be, and because they already have equipment and a stadium and they have a process in place, they'll keep playing Division I football. They're not going to be playing real Division I football, like contending Division I football, where there's something that we have a goal and we can achieve it and it matters outside of these walls. And there's a lot you can achieve that is great for the team and the coaches and the player, everybody else. But it just doesn't hit nationally. And that's where Syracuse is right now. They're going to be in that, we're trying for goals, you know, they really only matter sort of to us.
Marketing is everywhere, from the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone. We are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
This morning in the Atlanta airport, no one's missing a meal on Mac Wilburn's watch. With 11 restaurants to serve passengers, he's got dining for every destination. And it all started when Mac talked with First Horizon Bank about opening a franchise in the airport. Now it's open for business and cleared for takeoff. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Mac. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Is there chaos in your closet?
Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a three-piece, all right? Which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart. There needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and at Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com, and then call us for a free in-home consultation.